The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Today we're going to talk about giving rise to the unsurpassed mind. Great Master Dogen starts off this chapter by talking about metaphors and how he uses them. The Shobogenzo is full of metaphors. He starts, "Our highest ancestor in India, Shakyamuni Buddha, once said, 'The snow-capped Himalayas are a metaphor for the great Nirvana.' You need to know that he is speaking metaphorically about something that can be metaphoric. Something that can be metaphoric implies that the mountains and Nirvana are somehow intimately connected and that they are connected in a straightforward manner. When he uses the term snow-capped Himalayas, he is using the actual snow-capped Himalayas as a metaphor. Just as when he uses the term great Nirvana, he is using the actual great Nirvana as a metaphor." The clue here is that the metaphor and that which it represents are connected in a straightforward manner. There is something in the metaphor that points directly to what Dogen is trying to express. This is really helpful when we're trying to read the Shobogenzo, because it's full of metaphors, but often pointing directly in a straightforward manner. He's not just being mysterious and poetic. He's trying to convey something to us concretely. And often a metaphor or an analogy is the best way to do it. He's using a picture rather than words to express something. It's direct. It goes beyond words in a certain way, and we're more likely to remember it. The snow-capped Himalayas and the great Nirvana, what do they have in common? Dogen had never seen the Himalayas. He'd never been there, but he'd heard about them. They must have been legendary. They still are. Unimaginably vast, beautiful, inaccessible in any ordinary way, especially at that time. Nobody would think of trying to climb those huge mountains. The direct connection between the Himalayas and the great Nirvana, that vastness and mysteriousness. Dogen says, "Bodhidharma once said, any mind and all minds are like trees and stones." Here's another metaphor. What are trees and stones? They're the ordinary things of our daily experience, our ordinary daily mind. And he goes on, "Mind here means mind just as it is. It is the mind that encompasses the whole of the great earth. Therefore, it is the mind of self and the mind of other. The mind that discriminates between self and other, between this and that. Any mind and all minds, those of ordinary worldly humans, those of the Buddhas and ancestors, those of celestial and demonic beings, among others, are precisely like trees and stones, ordinary things, and there is no mind apart from this. There isn't some special, different mind that we have to get somehow. It's this ordinary mind that we have. It's not separate. And, he says, by means of this mind of trees and stones, the mind of our daily experience, we give rise to the mind, capital M, that both seeks the way and does the practice to awaken to it, because these are the trees of our mind and the stones of our mind. Not something separate. One leads into the other naturally. They're not different. Don't despise this ordinary mind. It's by means of this mind of trees and stones, this ordinary mind, that we awaken our aspiration for the way and do the training. So don't despise these trees and stones of our experience. They are what help us on our way. They have got us to this point. They have made us what we are now. With the aid of these trees and stones of our mind, we bring forth what we are thinking about here and now, based upon not deliberately thinking about anything in particular. In other words, doing our meditation. All that we are is made up of what we have thought and done in the past. It's made up of our mind of trees and stones. We're made up of our past experience, our thoughts and our habits. We can accept them and be grateful for them. They have helped us on our way. And we're not just stuck with them. We can change our habits of mind. We can let things go. Dogen goes on. The national teacher Etchu once said, "The tiles and stones of our walls and fences, i.e. this is our experience of what we make of it, they are precisely what the mind of old Buddhas is. We should look into this. The mind of old Buddhas is not something far off. It is being satisfied with the morning gruel and being satisfied with the noontime meal. It is being satisfied with the grass and being satisfied with the water, like a well-trained water buffalo." As Reverend Hubert points out their analogy, another metaphor, an awakened trainee being satisfied with the grass and satisfied with the water. Being satisfied with the morning gruel and being satisfied with the noontime meal. Being content with our daily life. The morning gruel and noontime meal of our daily, ordinary life. Nothing special. Being content to be nourished by the Dharma that we practice every day. The mind of old Buddhas is not something separate from us. It's not something remote from us. We have this same mind. We're not different. We're not separate. We have this same mind, we have what we need, we just need to trust it. He goes on, "To treat your mind in this way and to sit like a Buddha and act like a Buddha is called giving rise to the mind that seeks Buddhahood. Speaking more generally, the causes and conditions for giving rise to the enlightened mind do not come from any other place than the mind that seeks to be enlightened. For it is our very mind that is giving rise to the intention to search for Buddhahood." So don't think that you're lacking something, that you're lacking the mind that seeks the way, that it's for other people who have something that you don't have. It's up to us whether we nourish this mind or not, the mind that seeks the way. We simply put it into practice by sitting like a Buddha and acting like a Buddha as best we can. We don't have to be perfect. It's our aspiration that's most important. We're giving rise to the intention to search for Buddhahood. Searching for Buddhahood doesn't mean that we lack something now. We're trying to realize our Buddhahood, make it real, practice our enlightenment, as Dogen has said many times. We're not looking for something we don't have. We're trying to make real, put into practice what we have now, by sitting like a Buddha, acting like a Buddha, as best we can. Dogen goes on to give numerous examples of giving rise to the mind that seeks to be enlightened. Offering a blade of grass, offering a handful of sand is a story of a child who offers a handful of sand to a Buddha and later on in a later life becomes King Ashoka because of this little offering of a handful of sand to a Buddha by a child. Offering rice to someone. To practice some bit of good at the suggestion of another. To do bows to the Buddha upon having been annoyed by some demon. Often when Dogen refers to demons, he means the arising of greed, hate and delusion. So when you've been annoyed by some demon, maybe we've broken the precepts. So we do bows of contrition to the Buddha, to do bows to the Buddha upon having been annoyed by some demon. Bows of contrition, probably. Sitting in meditation, reading the scriptures, making Buddha images or stupas. He goes on, all these expressions of faith, the expressions of a pure heart, the mind that seeks the way, all these different kind of practice, of offerings. There are people who have given rise to this intention in their sleep or in a drunken stupor, like the drunken Brahmin we talked about, who became a monk when he was drunk, and then wakes up in the morning and is horrified, tears off his robes and runs away. But there's still merit in that. Or giving rise to the intention amidst falling leaves or flower petals, or peach blossoms or bamboos, or high in the heavens or deep in the ocean. Many of these examples are based on stories in the scriptures or tales of monks who have become enlightened on seeing peach blossoms or hearing a stone strike a piece of bamboo. The old stories are full of anecdotes like this. Dogen says, in all these cases, they have given rise to the mind of enlightenment, whilst within the enlightened mind, capital M, and have given rise to the mind of enlightenment, whilst within body and mind. There's no separation here. He goes back and forth. Our little daily mind, the enlightened mind, our body and mind, the mind that seeks the way is within all of these. Nothing separate. So Dogen goes back and forth and in and out. He doesn't let us get stuck with any of these kinds of mind. Ah, this is the great, wonderful mind. This is my ordinary little daily mind, which is worthless. It's all the mind. It's all nothing separate. They're not different minds. They're all aspects of the same mind. It's what we do with it that matters. He goes on, thus, our present-day fashioning of such things as stupas and images of Buddhas is undoubtedly due to our giving rise to our enlightened mind. It is our giving rise to the intention to reach Buddhahood forthwith and without giving up midway. Ceaseless practice, never giving up, keeping on going. This spiritually beneficial activity is free of any attachments. It is a meritorious activity that is free of any striving. Well, how can we give rise to the mind that seeks enlightenment and yet be free of any striving and be free of all attachments? It's by the practice of faith and devotion, simply doing our training, giving ourselves to it wholeheartedly, making our offerings to the three treasures, using our everyday experience and our everyday mind, not despising any of these to look for something different, being content with our daily life, while training hard within it, doing our very best, yet not striving for something, not trying to get something, trusting that doing the training is the practice of enlightenment itself, not a separate thing. Dogen continues, this mind enables us to see the true nature of all things. This is seeing Dharma nature. It is the meditative state that beckons to all the Buddhas. It is the invocation that finds all the Buddhas. It is the supreme, fully enlightened mind. It is the fruition of arhathood. It is the full manifestation of Buddhahood. Apart from this, there is no other method that is free of all attachments and free of any striving. Dogen isn't saying we're fully enlightened here. He's pointing out that our giving rise to the intention to realize Buddhahood is our enlightened mind. It's not a different mind. It's the mind of Buddhahood. There isn't some cut-off point. There is no mind apart from this. It's all one mind, and yet it has changed. It's like growing from a child to an adult. At what point do we stop being a child? And suddenly we're grown up. There may be moments in our life when we suddenly grow up, but it's really overall a gradual thing. We're the same person in a way, but we're not quite the same. And we go back and forth. Our mind that seeks the way grows out of our mind of trees and stones, our everyday mind. And this is also the mind of enlightenment. In practice, we might go back and forth. At one moment, we may see the true nature of all things, have a glimpse, and a moment later, we may do something completely dumb and selfish, childish even. We go back and forth. We're not guaranteed anything. It isn't a one-way thing. And there aren't separate stages or separate minds. It's all one mind. And this means we have to keep up our training and never think we've arrived. We're always going on, always becoming Buddha. If we think we've arrived, we've slid back. Always becoming Buddha, even when we make a mistake or seem to regress, we're still becoming Buddha. It's all ceaseless practice. Sometimes we may take a roundabout way for a while, like this son who goes away from his father and eventually finds his way back. He still finds his way back, but it's taken him a long time. It's all ceaseless practice. Never doubt this. All our training, our mistakes, are coming back. It's all the one mind used in different ways. It's all ceaseless practice. Now Dogen goes on a rant about people who say that making Buddha images or building stupas is just fostering attachments, and that one should just bring the selfish mind to a halt and be tranquil, train oneself to see the ultimate reality of Buddha nature. Well, we might think, that doesn't sound so bad. What's the problem? It's the attitude of mind that's the problem. To make judgments about this is training, that isn't. There's nothing wrong with making images of the Buddha or building stupas. There are ways of venerating the Buddha. It's not fostering attachments. It could be, but it doesn't have to be. It's a way of making offerings, offering something to the Buddha, doing something with a heart of faith. And sitting and thinking about ultimate reality can be just thinking about oneself. It doesn't necessarily mean one is non-attached and doing some superior training. Dogen gets quite steamed up about these people who think building stupas is fostering attachments. Presumably he was thinking of that bunch somewhere who were looking down on people who trained in practical ways. And Dogen says, don't listen to these people. Wash your mind clean, wash your body clean, wash your ears clean, wash your eyes clean, and you will neither look at nor pay attention to such views and opinions. Just follow the teachings of the Buddha. Follow good spiritual guides. Keep coming back to the true teaching and explore through your training with your master what the Buddha Dharma is. Just have faith in the training and do it wholeheartedly. Your training with your master, we talked about this. Just following your path of training, commitment, committed to your path of training. Don't look down on someone else's training just because they may do it a little differently. We all have our own slightly different way. Don't look down on your own training either or your own efforts. We all have our own karmic impediments and our own strengths and weaknesses, our own talents and our own difficulties. Ceaseless practice, all those ancestors Dogen talked about, trained in different ways, they were all different, and yet they all had the same heart of faith and commitment. Ceaseless practice, they did not stop. They had faith in their way of training, each of them, and they did not stop. There's some really beautiful passages in this chapter. And I think not to try and figure them out too much, just let them kind of pour through. I'll read you a few. In the great way of the Buddha Dharma, the scriptures of the whole universe exist within a single mote of dust, and all the Buddhas beyond measure exist within a single mote of dust. There is not a tree or a blade of grass that is separate from our body and mind. When the myriad thoughts and things do not arise, our whole mind also does not arise. And since this is the true form of all thoughts and things, it is the true form of every single mote of dust. Accordingly, our whole mind is all thoughts and things, and all thoughts and things are our whole mind, our whole being. You should firmly trust and understand that such things as the fashioning of Buddhist images and the raising of stupas are simply a manifestation of the mind that seeks enlightenment. Such efforts to fulfill the wish to help rescue all sentient beings, have been fostered over millions of eons, but they are the giving rise to the intention to realize Buddhahood over millions and millions of eons. We call this encountering Buddha and hearkening to his teaching. Nothing separate. Everything exists within a single mote of dust. There's nothing, not a tree or a blade of grass that is separate from our body and mind. Nothing is separate. Everything is part of everything else. And firmly trusting that such things as the fashioning of images and raising of stupas are just a manifestation of the mind that seeks enlightenment. Trust our simple faith, our simple training, whether they were doing something practical like building stupas, moving wood, sitting in meditation, or when we do it with a heart of faith and reverence, this is the mind that seeks enlightenment. And such efforts have been fostered over millions of eons. The ceaseless practice of beings, our own ceaseless practice, none of it separate, not my little practice, but just ceaseless practice that pervades everywhere. Shakyamuni Buddha once said, "When I saw the morning star emerge, I was enlightened simultaneously with the whole of the great earth and all its sentient beings." Accordingly, giving rise to the intention, doing the training and practice, awakening and realizing nirvana, we'll be giving rise to the intention, doing the training and practice, awakening and realizing nirvana, and all at the same time, nothing separate. The body and mind of which the Buddha spoke encompasses grasses and trees, tiles and stones, practical things, as well as wind and rain, water and fire. Finding ways to make use of these in order to help realize what the Buddha said is precisely what giving rise to the intention to realize Buddhahood is. Fashion your stupas and your images of Buddha by taking hold of the unbounded. And fashion your images of Buddha and your stupas by using both hands to scoop up the water of the spirit from the mountain stream, for such actions are your giving rise to supreme, fully perfected enlightenment. And so, throughout hundreds of thousands of myriad eons, this is how one person's giving rise to the intention to realize Buddhahood manifests, which is the same as doing the training and awakening to the truth. Our training pervades everywhere. Shakyamuni Buddha's training pervades us, past, present and future, in all times and in all worlds, just to trust this. The grasses and trees, tiles and stones of our ordinary daily life, they're all part of it. Wind and rain, water and fire, the four elements, the water of the spirit, all these things, they're all part of one thing. And we make it manifest by doing our ceaseless practice, giving rise to the unsurpassed mind, doing our best. At the same time, when you hear the giving rise to the intention to realize Buddhahood as a one-time thing, after which it doesn't arise again, and that the fruits of awakening are a one-time event, you're not understanding the Buddha Dharma. The intention can arise millions of times. It's still the same intention. And we experience it like this. Our aspiration to train ourselves doesn't arise just once. It arises over and over again, and we nourish it. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to keep up our ceaseless practice. We would wander off the path. We have to keep nourishing this aspiration, the intention to realize Buddhahood, the intention to make it real for ourselves, by sitting like a Buddha and acting like a Buddha. This intention comes up over and over again. And we know this. We realize we experience it for ourselves. We have our warmer and cooler moments. Sometimes it's really hard. We're slogging through the desert. And sometimes, yes, I really want to do this. It comes up over and over again. And when our aspiration is strong, or when our aspiration is weak, it's still ceaseless practice. Even when we're making a mistake or behaving like an animal, as Dogen has said, it's still our ceaseless practice. But we keep nourishing it, coming back to faith, constantly coming back, just as in meditation, coming back to the path. Dogen talks about making offerings to the Sangha. He's talking to these lay disciples, making offerings to monks. But as we see, it goes both ways. Shakyamuni Buddha once said, "You lay men and lay women who are my virtuous sons and daughters, make alms offerings to the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, with the flesh of your spouses and children, and make alms offerings to the three treasures with your own flesh. How can all the monks who have already received the alms you've offered in good faith possibly fail to do their training?" Now the Buddha isn't saying you have to give away your spouse and children or sacrifice your own flesh in some weird way. He wasn't like that. And Dogen explains this. He says, "So be aware that making alms offerings to the three treasures of such things as food, clothing, bedding, medicine, lodging for monks, cultivated lands and woodlands, is your making alms offerings of your own flesh and skin, bones and marrow, as well as those of your spouse and children. When we give, we're giving something of ourselves. It's not something separate from ourselves. And it's not something separate from our own family. It's all connected. It's not my little gift separate from everything else. We give wholeheartedly this boundlessness, whether a small or a large gift, and whoever we're giving to, whether we're giving to monks, giving to each other, giving to people we meet, giving time. It's all, there's a boundless giving. We're talking about this limitless, boundless, seamless giving and receiving. Dogen goes on, "Having already entered the three treasures' ocean of meritorious activity, you are therefore all of one and the same flavor. Because you are all of one and the same flavor, you are the three treasures. The meritorious activity of the three treasures has already manifested in the skin and flesh, bones and marrow of your own body, as well as that of your spouse and children, for it is your diligence in doing your utmost to practice the way. Now, joining with the true nature and form of the world-honored one, you should explore the skin and flesh, bones and marrow of the Buddha's way. This present alms offering of your very being is your giving rise to the intention to realize Buddhahood. So how could those monks who received your offering possibly fail to do the practice and do it correctly from start to finish? Our offerings are our training, and our training is our offering, nothing separate. And for monks, because we live on offerings, we really need to train ourselves as deeply and faithfully as we can in order to be worthy of those offerings and to give merit to the donors, if we take it seriously. So we all make offerings, both lay people and monks. It goes both ways. We make offerings to each other, both physical and spiritual offerings. The two kinds of alms, material and spiritual, have the endowment of boundless merit." That's what it means. Nothing separate, nothing greater, nothing smaller, nothing truer, nothing less true. In any kind of offering, there is boundless merit. Whoever we're offering to, whatever we are offering, we're offering with a sincere heart, whether we're building stupas, creating a golden body of the Buddha 16 feet high, or a child offering a handful of sand with a pure heart, there is boundless merit, the opening of the heart, giving rise to the unsurpassed mind. to give rise to your intention to realize Buddhahood is to wholeheartedly seek enlightened wisdom. This wholeheartedness must be as a single blade of grass or a single tree, because it is your single moment of life and your single moment of death. It's all part of the same thing. Even so, the depth of this meritorious activity is beyond any bounds, and its vastness is also beyond any bounds. Even with a Tathagata to speak for eons of time describing this meritorious activity, he could not fully exhaust the topic, even then. Thus, entering into the depths of the mountains to ponder the Buddha's way may well be easy, whereas to fashion a stupa or fashion a Buddha is ever so hard. Though both approaches are ripened by diligence and strenuous effort, the one makes use of the mind, and the other is being used by the mind, capital M, which is different by far. Time after time, giving rise to the enlightened mind in this way makes the Buddhas and ancestors manifest. Making use of the mind and being used by the mind. Both of these are valid. They're both good ways of training, he says. But being used by the mind, i.e. following where the unsurpassed mind leads us, is much harder. It's relinquishing our views and opinions, our agendas, and simply doing what needs to be done. With the heart of faith, making our offering in whatever way is good, not being in control, in charge of, I'm going to do this, or my little offering, or my small thing, or it's just my offering, nobody else is doing this. Wholeheartedly, unboundedly, limitlessly, without conditions, we give ourselves with both hands to our ceaseless practice of the way. Homage to all the Buddhas and all worlds. Homage to all the bodhisattvas and all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.